my great-grandpa's story is something that still haunts me to this day. He was a young man of 23 when he was drafted into World War II in 1943, and now, at the astonishing age of 103, he shared with me an experience that he claimed was the most terrifying of his life. It was a tale so chilling that even the memory of it gave him nightmares. Curiosity got the better of me, and I asked him if the story involved the vicious Japanese soldiers of that time. But he shook his head and told me it was something else entirely, something that no one ever believed. He had been stationed in the Philippines in 1943, tasked with holding off the Japanese forces along with his comrades. One fateful day, he and his friend Samuel got separated from their platoon while navigating a forest within the mountainous region. The exact province eluded my great-grandpa's memory, but he remembered the dense forests and scattered villages that surrounded them. As they called out for their comrades, they ventured deeper into the wilderness until they reached the forest's end. I asked him why they didn't simply radio their platoon for help. He explained that they tried, but for some inexplicable reason, their communications were scrambled and unintelligible, a fact that unsettled both him and Samuel. Still, they continued, mindful of the possibility of encountering Japanese soldiers. Emerging from the forest, they noticed that the sun was about to set, prompting my great-grandpa to suggest setting up camp. Samuel agreed, and as they prepared, they noticed a small wooden hut in the distance. Curiosity led them to approach the mysterious structure. They knocked on the door, but there was no sign of anyone inside, only scattered clothes strewn about the floor. My great-grandpa suggested that the inhabitants might have fled in a panic, a theory Samuel concurred with. They decided to make camp inside the hut, but something felt off. As they ate dinner, Samuel proposed taking shifts to keep watch throughout the night, wary of the potential danger they could face. While my great-grandpa slept, Samuel abruptly woke him up, his voice trembling with fear. He claimed to have seen movement outside, and my great-grandpa grabbed his rifle, demanding to know what he had spotted. Samuel handed him binoculars and pointed towards a field 300 yards away. At first, my great-grandpa saw nothing, but then he noticed a figure moving in the darkness. As he focused his binoculars, he realized it was just a wild boar, and he reassured Samuel. However, their peace was short-lived. The oil lamp inside the hut began to flicker and went out. My great-grandpa went to relight it, but despite the abundance of oil, it repeatedly extinguished. Samuel started feeling uneasy about the situation, and they couldn't shake the feeling that something was amiss. Suddenly, the wild boar disappeared into thin air, leaving them both puzzled. A loud thud from above startled them, as if something had landed on the hut's roof. My great-grandpa and Samuel grabbed their rifles, sensing impending danger. Samuel urged them to leave immediately, and as they gathered their belongings and exited the cabin, my great-grandpa turned his light toward the roof. What he saw still haunts him to this day, a grotesque and malevolent creature perched there. It had a humanoid appearance, with enormous wings resembling a mix of bats and hawks, blood-red eyes that glowed in the dark, jet-black skin, wild unkempt hair, and enormous fangs that protruded from its closed mouth. Terrified, my great-grandpa fired his rifle at the creature, and Samuel did the same. To their astonishment, the creature remained unfazed, its gaze fixed upon them. Panic set in, and they started screaming as they fled for their lives, running blindly through the night. Miraculously, the creature did not pursue them, and they eventually stumbled upon a small village where they found refuge. The locals explained that what had attacked them was known as an aswang, a common supernatural entity in the countryside. They considered my great-grandpa and Samuel fortunate to have survived such an encounter. Reunited with their platoon after a few days, they shared their harrowing tale, but only a few believed them. Most assumed they had been intoxicated and encountered enemy fire, attributing Samuel's neck wound to that. After the war ended, they returned home, haunted by the traumatic encounter. Samuel, however, passed away at the age of 80 due to a stroke. The story sent shivers down my spine, and I spent hours researching aswangs, to learn more about these terrifying creatures. It's a tale that has left an indelible mark on me, leaving me with more questions than answers about the unknown horrors that my great-grandpa and Samuel faced that night. As I loaded up my motorbike with the essentials for my solo hunting trip, the crisp air of Ross River nipped at my skin, reminding me that summer in Yukon was nothing but a fleeting guest. I'm Kevin, just a regular guy with a taste for the wilderness and a knack for hunting. Ross River, my little corner of the world, is a place where the untamed beauty of Canada's wilderness meets the quiet life of a small community. It's the kind of place where everyone knows everyone, and the land feels like an extension of your own backyard. The plan was simple. Head out to a secluded spot between Sheldon Lake and McQuesten, meet up with a couple of pals from work the next day, and spend 3 days hunting moose before returning to the humdrum of everyday life. Seemed like the perfect getaway, but as I revved up my bike and set off on the North Canole Road, a sense of unease settled in my gut. It was a feeling I couldn't shake off, like a shadow clinging to my back. The weather was turning, and not for the better. The temperature had dropped noticeably since I left home, and the sky was a brooding canvas of gray, ready to spill its contents at any moment. I've always been the kind who respects nature's moods, but on that day, it felt more ominous than ever. The gentle onset of rain soon turned into a steady downpour, forcing me to pull over and layer up. Wet and cold, I continued my journey, the discomfort a small price for the anticipation of the hunt. There's something about the wilderness that speaks to me, something raw and untamed. As I rode, the vast expanse of the Yukon enveloped me, its wild beauty a sharp contrast to the growing unease in my mind. It was a strange day. Even the birds seemed to sense it, their songs muted and distant. By the time I reached the trailer at Dewhurst Creek, dusk was creeping in, uninvited. Soaked through, I shivered as I lit a fire, the flames casting eerie shadows against the walls. Hunger was the last thing on my mind, but I forced down a quick meal before exhaustion claimed me. I remember thinking, as I drifted off to sleep, that tomorrow would be a new day, clear skies, and hopefully, a successful hunt. But the wilderness has its own plans, and sometimes, they don't align with ours. As dawn broke, I was greeted by a clear sky, the rain having retreated as abruptly as it had arrived. Eager to make the most of the day, I dressed quickly, loaded my firearm, and hopped back on my bike. The air was fresh, and the world seemed renewed, washed clean by the night's downpour. I rode at a leisurely pace, the engine's hum a comforting companion. The landscape unfolded before me, a tapestry of greens and browns, punctuated by the rugged mountains in the distance. It was picturesque, serene, and for a moment, I let myself get lost in it, the earlier unease momentarily forgotten. But life, I've learned, is full of unexpected turns. And what happened next was as unexpected as it gets. The morning was unfolding like any hunter's dream. The air was crisp and clean, the kind that fills your lungs with a refreshing chill. I was in my element, the wilderness of Yukon embracing me in its vast, untouched splendor. There's a unique kind of silence out here, the kind that makes you feel both insignificant and at one with the world. I've always found comfort in this solitude, a peace that the bustling streets of Ross River couldn't offer. As I navigated the rugged terrain on my bike, scouting for signs of moose, the sun began to cast its early light, painting the mountains in hues of gold and amber. It was during one of those moments, the kind when you feel like you're the only soul for miles, that I saw it. At first glance, it looked like an airplane, a silhouette against the brightening sky. But something was off. It was too low, too quiet. I squinted, trying to make sense of what I was seeing. It was large, about the size of a school bus, and it moved with a purposeful grace, slicing through the air without a sound. It seemed to flicker, like it was struggling to stay in this world. I remember feeling a chill that had nothing to do with the morning air. This was no plane. It was something else, something otherworldly. A UFO, perhaps. The thought should have scared me, should have sent me racing back to Ross River. but it didn't. Instead, I felt an overwhelming sense of calm, as if whatever was out there in the sky was telling me that everything was all right. I instinctively reached for my camera, a habit I've developed over the years to capture the raw beauty of Yukon. But as my fingers grazed the lens, that same calming sensation washed over me again. It whispered to me, in a way that words can't describe, that I didn't need to take a picture, that this moment was meant for my eyes only. And just like that, the object was gone, vanishing behind a conical hill, leaving me alone with the rising sun and a heart full of wonder. I stood there for a while, trying to make sense of what I'd just witnessed. Was it real? A trick of the light? Or something more? As I pondered, a sudden noise snapped me back to reality. It was a sharp metallic clang, like the sound of a heavy trunk slamming shut. It came from just around the bend in the road, and my hunter's instinct kicked in. Quietly, I walked towards the sound, my senses on high alert. Rounding the corner, the sight that greeted me was something straight out of a science fiction novel. There, standing in the tall grass, were two figures. They were short, maybe 5 feet tall, clad in blue jumpsuits that hugged their slender frames. But it was their heads that caught my attention. They weren't human. They were insect-like, with pointed gray faces and enormous eyes that seemed to pierce through me. For a moment, time stood still. Then one of them raised a hand, holding what looked like a flashlight. A bright flash enveloped me, and the world went black. In that instant, I felt a sense of detachment, as if my very being was being pulled away from my body, stretching towards the sky. And then, nothing. In the days that followed that inexplicable encounter on the North Canole Road, my mind was a tumultuous river of confusion and fragmented memories. I found myself back at the trailer, the events between seeing those insect-like beings and waking up on the roadside lost in a fog of uncertainty. The shadows of the trees told a story of missing time, hours unaccounted for, and the sun was already beginning its descent. I tried to shake it off, telling myself it was fatigue, maybe a trick of the mind. But deep down, I knew something extraordinary had happened. The wilderness had always been my place of clarity, but now it felt like a labyrinth of unanswered questions. As the days turned into weeks, and weeks into months, snippets of memories began to surface like debris after a storm. They came in flashes, unexpected and disorienting. I remembered the sensation of being scrutinized by those gray beings, their large, unblinking eyes examining me with an intelligence that was both terrifying and mesmerizing. I recalled the interior of what I could only describe as their craft, a place that defied the laws of physics as I knew them. There were glimpses of being led through corridors that seemed to shift and change, and the feeling of being both a specimen and a guest. The most vivid memory was standing before a window, or what I thought was a window, gazing out at the vastness of space. There were stars, galaxies, and celestial bodies I couldn't name, all spread out in an infinite canvas. A gray being, its presence somehow comforting and authoritative, communicated to me, not in words but in thoughts, showing me visions of Earth from afar, a tiny, fragile orb in the void. They told me I would forget, that it was necessary. And for a long time I did. But the mind has a way of holding on to truths, no matter how deep we bury them. I found myself drawn to stories of others who had experienced similar encounters, tales that spanned across cultures and decades. It became clear that what I experienced was not unique, that these beings, these insectoids, had been visiting us for longer than we could fathom. The more I delved into the world of ufology, the more I realized how complex and layered the phenomenon was. It wasn't just about lights in the sky or mysterious crafts. It was about a connection, however elusive, with something beyond our understanding. But understanding was what I craved. I needed to make sense of what happened to me, to know that I wasn't losing my grip on reality. I pored over books, interviewed experts, and even tried reaching out to other experiencers. Each story added a piece to the puzzle, yet the complete picture remained elusive. I wrestled with questions that had no answers. Why me? What did they want? Were they observers, guardians, or something else entirely? The more I searched, the more I realized that some truths might be beyond our grasp. As time passed, I learned to live with the mystery, to accept that some things are meant to be experienced, not explained. But the longing for understanding, the need to connect the dots, never really left me. It became a part of who I was, a silent companion on my journey through life. Months turned into years since that surreal morning on the North Canole Road, but the encounter never faded from my mind. It was like a shadow, always there, always lurking in the background of my thoughts. I had come to terms with the fact that I might never fully understand what happened to me, but that didn't stop me from seeking answers. I spent countless hours researching, diving deep into the world of ufology. I found stories from all corners of the globe, each as bewildering and varied as my own. From the dense forests of Yukon to the sprawling deserts of the American Southwest, people had encountered beings that defied explanation. The mantis-like creatures I had seen were just one part of a much larger, more complex phenomenon. These stories, these encounters, they weren't just isolated incidents. They were part of a tapestry that stretched back through history. From ancient folklore to modern-day sightings, the narrative remained consistent, beings from the stars visiting our little blue planet. Some encounters were benign, others terrifying, but all were transformative in their own way. I couldn't help but wonder about the purpose of these visits. Were they simply observing us, like scientists studying a lesser-known species? Or was there a greater agenda at play, something beyond our comprehension? The theories were as varied as the encounters themselves. Some spoke of intergalactic diplomacy, others of sinister experiments. The truth, it seemed, was as elusive as the beings themselves. Despite the myriad of stories and theories, one thing became clear. These encounters had a profound impact on those who experienced them. Like me, they struggled to reconcile their experiences with the reality they had known. Their lives were forever changed, marked by a sense of otherness, a connection to something greater than themselves. In my quest for answers, I came across other experiencers. We shared our stories, our theories, and our frustrations. In each other, we found a sense of camaraderie, a mutual understanding that was hard to come by in the outside world. We were a community bound by our experiences, seekers on a journey for truth. But the truth, I learned, was a tricky thing. The more I searched, the more I realized that some mysteries might never be solved. Perhaps that was the point, not to find answers, but to keep seeking, to keep questioning. Our encounters had opened our minds to possibilities we had never imagined, and maybe that was the real gift. As I sat on the porch of my cabin in Ross River, looking up at the star-filled sky, I couldn't help but feel a sense of awe. The universe was vast and mysterious, full of wonders we had yet to discover. My encounter with the unknown had been a small glimpse into that vastness, a reminder of how little we truly understand. The questions remained, but so did the sense of wonder. The universe was a puzzle, and we were all pieces, trying to find our place in the grand scheme of things. My encounter with the mantis-like beings was a part of my journey, a chapter in a story that was still being written. As the night deepened and the stars shone brighter, I realized that some mysteries were meant to be embraced, not solved. And in that embrace, there was a kind of peace, a recognition that we are all part of something much larger than ourselves. The enigma of my encounter would always be with me, but so would the sense of wonder, the unending quest for understanding in a universe full of mysteries. I've always believed that some nights are just different, you know? Like they have this weird energy that makes you do things you wouldn't normally consider. That Friday night was one of those. I'm Sullivan, by the way. The guy with a quarter Native American blood and an uncomfortable knack for feeling when things are about to get weird. Alex and Ted, my two best friends since middle school, were with me, aimlessly driving around the streets of our small New Jersey town. Ted, the joker of our trio, was behind the wheel of his beat-up Ford, and Alex, who could best be described as the brains of our operation, rode shotgun. I was lounging in the back seat, my head resting against the window, watching streetlights flicker by. "Guys, what if we did something different tonight?" Alex suddenly said, breaking the silence. "Like what? Drive to another town and find a new diner?" Ted joked, drumming his fingers on the steering wheel. "No, something more adventurous. What about that lake between Central and North Jersey, the one people say is haunted or something?" Alex proposed, his eyes lighting up. Ted's grin widened. "Haunted, you say? Now we're talking." I sat up straighter. "You mean the lake near the Pine Barrens? The one supposedly built over an Indian burial ground," I added, a bit uneasy. "My grandma used to tell me stories about respecting such places." "Yeah, exactly that one," Alex confirmed. I hesitated. Something about the idea seemed off, but the thrill of adventure and the excitement in my friend's eyes were too contagious to resist. "All right, let's do it," I finally agreed, trying to shake off my apprehension. We drove to the lake, the car filled with a mix of excitement and nervous energy. The Pine Barrens at night were like something out of an eerie movie, with tall, shadowy trees and an unsettling stillness. As we reached the trailhead, the last rays of the sun were disappearing, casting a golden glow on the dense foliage around us. We began our hike towards the lake, the sounds of nature our only company. I couldn't help but feel a deep connection to the land, a reminder of my heritage. Ted and Alex were in high spirits, laughing and joking as we walked, but I couldn't shake off a feeling of unease. It was like the forest was watching us, aware of our every step. We talked about school, the latest video games, and girls, trying to keep the mood light. Yet the deeper we ventured, the more I felt a strange energy in the air. It was as if the forest had a secret, one that it wasn't keen on sharing with outsiders like us. And then, Ted, in his typical fashion to lighten the mood, pulled up some creepy goatman sounds on his phone. "This will make things more interesting," he chuckled, playing the eerie noises. I frowned, feeling a chill run down my spine. "We should be respectful, you know. This is native land," I warned, half joking, half serious. Ted laughed it off, but I couldn't help but feel that we were not alone. Little did we know, our light-hearted adventure was about to take a turn into something much darker and more inexplicable than any of us could have imagined. As we walked deeper into the Pine Barrens, the playful banter between Ted and Alex continued, but I couldn't shake off a growing sense of unease. The sun had dipped below the horizon now, and the woods around us were bathed in twilight. The beauty of the setting was undeniable, but so was the eerie feeling that we weren't alone. "I've heard stories about this place," I said, my voice a bit more serious than I intended. "They say the spirits of the land aren't too fond of visitors." Alex rolled his eyes. "Sullivan, you and your ghost stories," he said with a laugh. Ted, however, seemed intrigued. "What kind of spirits?" he asked, his eyes scanning the darkening woods. "Old ones. Native American legends speak of spirits that protect these lands," I explained, feeling a strange responsibility to share my heritage's lore. "They say some can be vengeful." But Ted, ever the prankster, wasn't going to let the opportunity pass to add some spookiness to our adventure. He played those goatman sounds from his phone again, the eerie cries echoing unnaturally in the dense forest. I felt a shiver run down my spine. "Dude, cut it out," I said, half joking, half serious. "You might attract something we don't want to meet." Ted laughed, but his laughter was cut short. We all stopped in our tracks. There, behind us, was a figure. It was distant, barely visible in the fading light, but unmistakably there. "What is that?" Alex whispered, his usual skepticism replaced by fear. I squinted, trying to make sense of what I was seeing. The figure was tall, too tall to be human, and unnaturally thin. It stood motionless, watching us. "It's probably just a tree or something," Ted said, but his voice lacked conviction. We hesitated, then continued walking, picking up our pace. I glanced back and my heart skipped a beat. The figure was following us, matching our speed with an eerie grace. "It's following us," I said, my voice barely above a whisper. "Don't be ridiculous," Alex said, but I could hear the fear in his voice. We walked faster, the jokes and laughter now replaced by tense silence. Every time I looked back, the figure was there, always the same distance behind us. "Guys, what if it's a..." I started to say, but I couldn't bring myself to finish the sentence. The word skinwalker lingered in my mind, unspoken. We reached a clearing and for a moment we thought we had lost it. But then, there it was, at the edge of the woods, watching us with its unnerving stillness. "Run," I said, and we did. We ran as fast as we could, not daring to look back. The sounds of our heavy breathing and the pounding of our feet on the trail were the only things we could hear. But even as we ran, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were not running from something, but towards something even more terrifying. The shadows of the Pine Barren seemed to close in around us, and I knew our night was far from over. We didn't stop running until we reached a part of the trail closer to the main road, where the sounds of distant cars brought a small sense of relief. Panting, we leaned on our knees, trying to catch our breaths. The eerie silence of the woods was now replaced by the distant hum of traffic. "We lost it, right?" Alex panted, looking back towards the dense trees. I wanted to believe we did, but something deep inside me said otherwise. "I'm not sure," I admitted, my voice shaky. "That thing, it wasn't normal." Ted, who was usually the bravest among us, looked genuinely scared. "What was that, Sullivan? You know about this stuff. Tell us it was just a bear or something." I wished I could. I wished I could explain it away as a trick of the light or an animal. But the image of that tall, slender figure silently trailing us was burned into my mind. "I don't know," I whispered. "But we should keep moving." We resumed our walk, but now with a heightened sense of vigilance. Every rustle in the bushes, every snap of a twig made us jump. The playful adventure had turned into a nightmare, and I couldn't shake off the feeling of being watched. As we approached an open area near the road, I thought we were safe. But when I turned around to check once more, my heart sank. It was there, barely 100 feet behind us. It had followed us, silent and relentless. "It's still there," I said, my voice barely audible. Ted and Alex turned, and I saw their faces drain of color. The creature was closer now, and in the dim light of the road, we could see it more clearly. It was humanoid but grotesquely thin, its skin pale and stretched over its bones. It had no face, just a blank expanse of skin where features should have been. "We need to get out of here," Ted said, and we started running again, fueled by pure fear. We sprinted down the trail, the creature's silent pursuit haunting every step. As we neared the parking area, our hopes were dashed. The lot was empty except for Ted's car. It was a stark reminder that we were alone out here. "Quick, get in the car!" Ted yelled, fumbling for his keys. We piled into the car, slamming the doors shut and locking them. Ted started the engine and floored it, the tires screeching as we sped away from the trail. As we drove, I looked back through the rear window, half expecting to see the creature following us. But there was nothing, just the dark, empty road. None of us spoke as we drove. The radio, usually blaring our favorite songs, was now silent. We were all processing the terror we had just experienced. When we finally reached my house, we sat in the car for a moment, the safety of familiar surroundings doing little to ease our shaken nerves. "That thing, what was it?" Alex finally broke the silence. I shook my head, unable to provide an answer. "I don't know," I said, "but I have a feeling this isn't the last we've seen of it." Little did I know how right I would be. The next day was eerie in its normalcy. The sun shone brightly, and birds chirped as if last night's horrors were just a figment of our imagination. I couldn't shake off the events, though. Every shadow seemed to hide a threat. Every noise made me jump. While walking my dogs, a sense of dread washed over me as a stray cat emerged from the woods, its eyes fixed on me. Grandma's stories echoed in my head about skinwalkers, creatures from Native American lore that could mimic any animal. I hurried back inside, my heart racing. Was this paranoia, or had last night's terror followed me home? Later that day, Ted called. "Hey, can I come over? I don't want to be alone," he said, his voice trembling. "Sure, man. I'll pick you up," I replied, trying to sound more confident than I felt. But when I pulled up to Ted's house, something was off. He climbed into the car, his face pale, his eyes darting around nervously. "Ted, you okay?" I asked as we drove back to my place. He was silent for a moment before he spoke. "Sullivan, I need to tell you something. When we got back to your house last night, I saw it, that thing. It was outside." My grip tightened on the steering wheel. "Outside my house?" I managed to ask, my voice barely above a whisper. Ted nodded. "I didn't want to scare you, but I think it's following us." A cold shiver ran down my spine. The creature had followed us out of the Pine Barrens. But why? And what did it want? We spent the evening trying to distract ourselves with video games, but our hearts weren't in it. Every creak of the house, every rustle of the wind outside, sent waves of fear through us. That night, lying in bed, I couldn't sleep. The shadows in my room seemed to move, and every small sound was magnified. I kept picturing that faceless creature lurking just beyond my window. The following days were a blur of anxiety and fear. Ted and I tried to act normal, but the shared experience had changed us. We jumped at shadows, avoided the woods, and barely spoke of what happened. A week later, Alex called a meeting at his house. "We need to talk about what happened," he said, his usual skepticism gone. We sat in his living room, the three of us, a sense of solemnity hanging in the air. "Do you think it was a skinwalker?" Alex asked, looking directly at me. I sighed. "I don't know, but whatever it was, it's not something we should take lightly." "We can't just pretend it didn't happen," Ted added, his voice shaky. "We agreed to do some research, to try and understand what we had encountered, but deep down, I knew some mysteries were better left unsolved. The Pine Barrens had revealed a glimpse of something ancient and terrifying, a reminder that some legends are rooted in truth. And as we delved deeper into the lore, trying to find answers, I couldn't shake off the feeling that the creature was still out there, watching, waiting. The shadows of the Pine Barrens had followed us, and our lives would never be the same again. I've seen my fair share of mysteries in my time, but nothing quite like the enigma that is the Round Valley Reservoir. They call it the Bermuda Triangle of New Jersey, and the more I delved into its history, the more I understood why. It wasn't just a catchy nickname, it was a warning. It started back in 71, with Thomas Trimblett and his brother-in-law, Christopher. Just a couple of guys out fishing on a clear day. They were in a 12-foot aluminum boat, the kind that's as common as cattails around these parts. No one thought much of it until they didn't come home. The search party found their capsized boat, but of Thomas and Christopher, there was no sign. Not then, not ever. It was as if the reservoir had swallowed them whole. I remember talking to one of the old-timers at the local diner about it. He had this way of stirring his coffee, slow, deliberate. "It's not just the drowning that gets you," he said, his voice a low rumble. "It's the not knowing, the unanswered questions that haunt you." And haunt they did. As years passed, the reservoir claimed more victims. Craig Steer and Andrew Fenella vanished while walking along the northern shoreline. One moment they were there, the next, just gone. No screams, no struggle, nothing. It was as if they'd stepped into another world. The locals started to talk. You'd hear whispers at the grocery store, see the fear in people's eyes at the gas station. It wasn't just a series of tragic accidents. Something more sinister was at play. It's funny how a place can change in the eyes of those who live there. I remember when the reservoir was a spot for family picnics and lazy fishing days. But after these disappearances, it morphed into something else. A mystery. A place of unease. I could feel it every time I drove past. A chill that wasn't just from the breeze off the water. But it wasn't just the disappearances that got to me. It was the lack of closure. Take Jeffrey Moore and Raymond Barr, for example. Their boat capsized on a day as calm as any. Ray was rescued, but Jeff, he was just gone. Vanished into thin air. I talked to Ray once, and the guilt in his eyes was something I won't forget. We were just fishing, he kept saying, as if he was trying to convince himself it was all just a normal day. The more I dug into these stories, the more I realized how deep the fear ran. It wasn't just the reservoir, it was the unknown, the unexplained, that had everyone on edge. I'd sit at the bar and listen to the theories, curses, vortexes, even alien abductions. Each tale was wilder than the last, but in their voices I heard something real, fear. As I looked out over the still waters of the Round Valley Reservoir, I couldn't help but feel a sense of foreboding. This wasn't just a body of water, it was a mystery, a keeper of secrets. And I knew, deep down, that some secrets are never meant to be uncovered. The Round Valley Reservoir had a way of keeping its secrets. As the years passed, each disappearance seemed to deepen the mystery, like layers of silt settling on a sunken object, obscuring it from view. 1989 brought a new chapter to this unsettling saga with the disappearance of John Kubu and Albert Lawson. They went out fishing, much like those before them, and only one came back, but not in the way anyone hoped. Lawson's body was recovered years later, but John was just another question mark in the reservoir's murky depths. I remember when the news broke about Lawson's body being found. It was a cold morning in 93, the kind that bites at your cheeks and numbs your fingers. I was at the station, nursing a cup of coffee that did little to warm me. The discovery brought a grim sort of closure, but it was like closing a book when half the pages were still missing. The case of Jeffrey Moore and Raymond Barr was a different kind of puzzle. Their boat capsized on a day that couldn't have been more perfect. Clear skies, calm waters. Ray was saved, but Jeff, it was as if the reservoir had just reached up and plucked him from the surface. No trace, no clue, nothing. The locals couldn't make heads or tails of it. If a man could disappear on a day like that, what did it say about the rest of us? The authorities did what they could. They brought in a submersible in 77, state-of-the-art at the time. André Galler piloted it, a man who'd worked with the famed Jacques Cousteau. If anyone could find answers at the bottom of that reservoir, it was him. But after a week of searching, the waters gave up nothing. It was like looking for ghosts. State troopers trained in underwater recovery took up the torch in the years that followed. They scoured the depths, combed through every inch they could reach, but the reservoir was stingy with its secrets. I spoke to one of the divers once, over a beer. His eyes had that far-off look of a man who'd seen too much and found too little. "It's like the water just swallows them whole," he said, a hint of bewilderment in his voice. In 2006, the community rallied again, armed with another state-of-the-art submersible. Hope has a way of hanging on, even in the face of relentless uncertainty. But again, the reservoir remained silent, its depths impenetrable, its secrets locked away. I'd often drive by the reservoir, my thoughts as turbulent as the waters were calm. The place had a way of getting under your skin, of making you question the line between the natural and the supernatural. In the diner, in the bars, the theories flew like sparks from a fire. Curses, hidden underwater chasms, even a submerged ghost town. But beneath all the speculation and fear, a sad truth lingered. People had vanished, leaving behind families, friends, and a community grappling with the unknown. As I gazed out over the still water, I couldn't shake the feeling that some mysteries are too deep, too dark, to ever see the light of day. And in those depths, the truth about the Round Valley Reservoir lay waiting, silent and inscrutable. There's a strange comfort in knowing, even when what you learn is grim. The Round Valley Reservoir, with its penchant for keeping its secrets, finally yielded some answers, albeit few and far between. Like a puzzle slowly piecing together, each recovery brought a fragment of truth, but the full picture remained elusive. In 2013, the reservoir gave up one of its long-held secrets. Kenneth Harton, a 56-year-old fisherman, was found in 70 feet of water. The state police's marine unit had picked up an unusual signal, an anomaly that stood out like a sore thumb in the otherwise mundane readings of the lake bed. Divers were dispatched, and there, in the depths, they found him. The community was abuzz with the news, a mix of relief and renewed anxiety. If Harton could be found after all these years, who else might still be down there? I remember standing on the shore the day they brought Harton up. The sky was a steel gray, the kind that presses down on you, heavy with unshed rain. There was a solemnity in the air, a quiet acknowledgement of the man's fate finally coming to light. It was closure, yes, but it was also a stark reminder of all those still missing, their stories untold, their fates unknown. The discovery of Harton prompted fresh talks, theories, and speculations. Some clung to logical explanations, the reservoir's unique geography creating sudden, lethal weather conditions. The frigid waters, slowing decomposition, keeping bodies hidden in its depths. It made sense, in a cold, scientific way, but it lacked the finality, the absolute answers we all craved. The more outlandish theories continued to circulate, too. Curses, supernatural forces, even extraterrestrial intervention were discussed in hushed tones in the corners of diners and bars. It was easier for some to believe in the fantastical than to confront the harsh randomness of nature. Then there was the discovery by those amateur divers, a reminder that sometimes the truth was more straightforward than we wanted to admit. They had stumbled upon the remains of a fisherman who had gone missing in 1976. It was a grim find, a skeleton still clad in rubber boots and tattered clothing. 11 months later, another body was found, in almost the same condition. It was a chilling echo of the past, a reminder that the reservoir held more than just water in its depths. These discoveries, as sparse as they were, brought a kind of solace. They were proof that not all was lost to the murky waters, that answers could still surface, even after decades. But with each answer came more questions, more whys and hows that lingered in the air, as palpable as the mist that often hung over the reservoir in the early mornings. As I walked away from the water's edge, I couldn't help but feel a sense of unease. The Round Valley Reservoir was more than just a body of water. It was a keeper of stories, a holder of secrets. And for every secret revealed, it seemed a dozen more were born. The truth, it seemed, was as elusive and deep as the reservoir itself. As the sun dipped below the horizon, casting long shadows over the Round Valley Reservoir, I found myself reflecting on the legacy of this enigmatic place. It was more than just a body of water. It was a symbol of the unexplainable, a testament to the mysteries that lie just beneath the surface of our understanding. Over the years, I've seen how this reservoir has gripped the imagination of the community and beyond. It's a place where logic meets legend, where fact intertwines with folklore. Each disappearance, each unexplained incident, added another layer to its mystique. And despite the occasional breakthroughs, the reservoir retained its air of mystery, its ability to both fascinate and terrify. I've walked these shores more times than I can count, each visit leaving me with more questions than answers. Theories about the reservoir ran the gamut from scientific to supernatural. Some folks spoke of underwater ghost towns, remnants of a bygone era submerged beneath the placid waters, fueling the reservoir's eerie reputation. Others whispered of curses laid by displaced Native American tribes, their spirits restless and vengeful. But amid the tales and theories, there was a palpable sense of loss, a collective mourning for those who had vanished without a trace. It was a reminder that behind each mystery, there were real people, families left grappling with the unknown, their grief a constant undercurrent in the community. The reservoir, with its dark waters and deeper secrets, had become a character in its own right, an enigmatic presence that loomed large in our collective consciousness. I've seen the way people's eyes would flicker to the water when they spoke of it, a mix of fear, respect, and awe. It was as if they were acknowledging an old, inscrutable adversary. As I stood there, the chill of the evening air creeping through my jacket, I couldn't shake the feeling that the reservoir was watching, listening. It was as though it was aware of its own legend, basking in the intrigue and speculation it inspired. The truth, I had come to realize, was as elusive as the shadows that played on the water's surface. Perhaps some mysteries weren't meant to be solved, their secrets destined to remain hidden in the depths. And maybe that was okay. After all, it's the unknown that draws us in, that stirs our imagination and keeps us searching, even when we know some answers may forever elude us. As I turned to leave, casting one last glance over the darkening waters, I knew that the legacy of the Round Valley Reservoir would endure, its stories passed down through generations. It would continue to haunt, to intrigue, to remind us of the thin line between the known and the unknown. And in that space, in the gap between light and shadow, truth and legend, the reservoir would remain, a silent sentinel, keeping its secrets in the deep. I remember that day like it was just yesterday. The woods near our neighborhood were always a sort of sanctuary for me, a place where the tall trees whispered secrets in the wind, and the small creeks babbled stories of faraway lands. It was the kind of place where kids from all around would come to ride their bikes through the winding trails, the sound of their laughter mingling with the rustling leaves. I loved those woods, not just for their beauty, but for the sense of adventure they offered. On that particular afternoon, around 4 p.m., the sun was casting golden beams through the canopy, creating a tapestry of light and shadow on the forest floor. I had decided to take Bertha, my faithful Labrador, for our usual walk. She was more than just a pet. She was my companion, my confidant. As we got out of the car, Bertha's tail wagged with excitement, her brown eyes gleaming with the joy of another adventure in our special place. We began our walk along the familiar trail, the crunch of leaves underfoot, the scent of pine and earth filling the air. Bertha led the way, her nose to the ground, eagerly sniffing out the scents of the forest. Everything was as it always was, serene and peaceful, until something strange happened. It started subtly at first, a faint tingling sensation that washed over me, like the gentle touch of an unseen hand. It wasn't fear or apprehension. Rather, it was a feeling of unexplained happiness, a sudden lightness of being that seemed to lift the weight of the world from my shoulders. My usual aches and pains, the remnants of an old football injury, vanished as if they had never been. A smile spread across my face, and a laugh bubbled up from deep within me. "Wow, I feel so good," I thought to myself. "I feel like a little kid. I'm brand new." This euphoria lasted for what seemed like an eternity, but in reality, it was probably only about 20 seconds. That's when everything changed. It was as if the forest itself had decided to reveal one of its secrets. From the corner of my eye, I noticed movement in the bushes. It wasn't the usual rustle of a small animal scurrying away. This was different. The bush shook violently, as if something, or someone, was holding on to it, intertwined in its branches, trying desperately to remain hidden. Bertha reacted instantly, her body tensing, a low growl emanating from her throat. She lunged towards the bush, pulling me along. I struggled to hold her back, my heart pounding in my chest. Whatever was in that bush was big, and it was close. I could hear it moving, heavy thuds like the footsteps of a giant, accompanied by the sound of branches snapping under its weight. I wanted to run, to take Bertha and flee back to the safety of my car. But something held me there, rooted to the spot. Curiosity? Fear? I couldn't tell. All I knew was that I had to see what was making that noise. As I stood there, heart racing, the forest around me seemed to hold its breath, waiting for what would happen next. The creature, whatever it was, moved again, this time through another bush. Its presence felt more than seen. I couldn't shake off the feeling that I was on the verge of discovering something extraordinary, something that would change everything. And so, with a mixture of fear and excitement, I stepped closer to the unknown. The mysterious rustling in the bushes had only deepened the enigma of the woods. Each step I took now felt heavier, as if I was walking into a story yet to be told. Bertha, sensing my apprehension, stayed close, her ears perked up, alert to every sound. That day, as we ventured deeper into the woods, the atmosphere seemed to thicken with suspense. The once familiar trees now appeared as looming specters, their branches reaching out like the fingers of a giant hand. My heart raced with a mix of fear and excitement. What was hiding in these woods? A part of me wanted to turn back, but curiosity propelled me forward. Then, it happened again. The same heavy rhythmic thumping that we had heard the day before, but louder this time, closer. It was as if something massive was walking, or rather stomping, just beyond the line of sight. Bertha growled, her body tensed, ready to bolt or fight, whichever came first. My mind raced. The sound was unlike anything I had heard before. It was like the footsteps of a colossal creature, something out of a monster movie. The ground vibrated with each thud, sending shivers up my spine. Yet for all the noise it made, there was nothing to see. The bushes shook and the leaves rustled, but there was no visible cause. It was then that the most terrifying sound of all filled the air. A loud, guttural roar, so deep and resonant it seemed to come from the very earth beneath our feet. It was like the roar of a T-Rex from the movies, only this was real, happening right in front of me. Bertha and I stood frozen, our eyes scanning the woods for any sign of the creature. "Sounds like a T-Rex from the movies," I whispered aloud, my voice barely a breath. The stomping stopped abruptly, as if the creature had heard me. A chilling silence fell over the woods. I could feel the vibrations of the last footstep fading away, leaving us in a suspenseful stillness. Despite the fear gripping my heart, I couldn't help but feel a strange sense of connection to this unseen being. It was as if it was aware of us, maybe even curious about us. But why couldn't we see it? What was it hiding from? Or perhaps, what was it hiding? For what felt like an eternity, Bertha and I stood there, staring into the woods, waiting for something to happen. But nothing did. The creature, if that's what it was, had vanished as mysteriously as it had appeared. As we made our way back home, my mind was a whirlwind of thoughts and questions. What was this invisible presence? Why did it make such terrifying sounds? Was it watching us now, hidden among the trees? The woods, once a place of joy and adventure, now held a secret, a mystery that both scared and fascinated me. That night, as I lay in bed, the sounds of the forest replayed in my mind. The rustling bushes, the heavy footsteps, the roar that shook the ground. I knew one thing for sure, I had to find out what was lurking in those woods. And so, with a mixture of dread and determination, I resolved to return to the forest, to uncover the truth behind the invisible terror that haunted it. The next few days passed in a blur of restless thoughts and endless questions. The woods had always been my escape, a place where I could forget the world and just be. But now, they were a puzzle, a mystery wrapped in an enigma, and I was drawn to it, unable to stay away. Each walk with Bertha became a mission, a search for answers. We treaded the same paths, but now with a heightened sense of awareness, every rustle of leaves sending a jolt of adrenaline through my veins. The invisible presence remained just that, invisible. But its effects were palpable, a feeling of being watched, of something just out of sight, always there, lurking in the shadows. Then, one day, it happened. It was an experience so fleeting, yet so profound, that it shook the very foundations of my reality. We were walking along a familiar trail, the air crisp with the scent of pine. The sun filtered through the leaves, casting a dappled pattern on the ground. I stopped for a moment to take in the beauty of it all, the serene tranquility of nature. As I stood there, lost in thought, a movement caught my eye. It was quick, just a blur, but it was there. Something large, something impossible. It moved between the trees, a mere 80 feet away, but in that fraction of a second, I saw it. It was humanoid, at least 10 feet tall, with broad, muscular shoulders and a large head. Its appearance was like nothing I had ever seen, a perfect blend of human and beast. But what was truly astonishing was its skin. It shimmered, reflecting the woods around it, like the predator from the movies, cloaked and almost invisible. The sight of it left me breathless, my mind struggling to process what my eyes had just seen. It was as if my brain had captured a snapshot of the creature, etching every detail into my memory. The thick, shiny hair on its leg, the contours of its muscles, the way it blended into the surroundings. It was all so vivid, so real. I stood there, rooted to the spot, my heart pounding in my chest. Bertha, sensing my shock, whined softly, nuzzling my hand. The creature, whatever it was, had vanished as quickly as it appeared, leaving no trace behind. As we walked back home, my mind raced with questions. What was this being? Why was it here? And most importantly, why had it run from me? Did it sense my presence, or was it startled by something else? The encounter left me with a sense of awe and a deep respect for the mysteries of the natural world. It also brought a newfound caution. The woods were no longer just a place of beauty and peace. They were a realm where the unknown lurked, where the line between reality and legend blurred. From that day on, I became more vigilant on our walks, always keeping an eye on the shadows, always listening for the slightest sound. I didn't know what the creature was, or what it wanted, but I knew one thing for sure. The woods were its domain, and we were just visitors, treading lightly in a world we barely understood. Ever since that day, when the impossible became possible before my eyes, the woods have never been the same for me. They have transformed from a simple escape into a place of profound mystery and wonder. Each time I walk with Bertha along those familiar paths, I find myself looking at the world around me with new eyes, seeing beauty and complexity in every leaf and every whisper of the wind. In the days following the encounter with the mysterious cloaked being, I found myself lost in a sea of thoughts. What was it? Why did it choose to reveal itself to me, even if only for a brief moment? These questions spun around in my head, unanswered but impossible to ignore. Yet, despite the uncertainty and fear that accompanied these thoughts, there was also a sense of exhilaration, a feeling of being part of something larger and more mysterious than I had ever imagined. I began to realize that perhaps we are not alone in our journey through this world. Maybe there are beings, entities, or forces that exist just beyond the reach of our understanding, watching over us, guiding us, or simply coexisting in a parallel reality we seldom perceive. One of the most profound changes in me was my newfound appreciation for Bertha. She was no longer just a pet, but a companion, a guardian who seemed to understand far more than I had given her credit for. Dogs, I mused, might be more attuned to the mysteries of the world than we are. They seem to sense things we cannot, perceive things beyond our comprehension. Maybe, in their own way, they are here to help us, to guide us through the unseen and the unknown. This journey through the woods, through the unknown, had also taught me a valuable lesson about life. It reminded me that there is so much more to the world than what meets the eye. It encouraged me to live fearlessly, to embrace the unknown, and to find joy in the journey, no matter how mysterious or frightening it may seem. As I continued my walks with Bertha, I made it a point to tell someone where I was going, to take precautions. The woods were beautiful, but they were also wild and unpredictable. I had learned to respect their secrets and to tread lightly in their realm. But more than anything, this experience had changed me in a good way. It had opened my eyes to the wonders and mysteries of life, to the possibility of the extraordinary existing alongside the ordinary. It made me realize that sometimes the most incredible adventures are not those we seek, but those that find us. And so, as I walk through the woods now, I do so with a sense of awe and respect. I listen to the whispers of the trees and the songs of the creeks, wondering what other secrets they might hold. I watch the shadows and the light, always aware, always ready for the next encounter, the next revelation. These woods, once just a place for a walk, have become a gateway to a world of wonder, a reminder that life is a beautiful mystery, waiting to be discovered. And I, along with Bertha by my side, am ready to embrace whatever comes our way, with no fear, only curiosity and a sense of adventure.